8:11 Therapy Thursday with Dr. Judy Blume. Good morning, Dr. Judy.
Good morning, EJ. Good morning, Nikki.
Good morning.
All right, so tell us about this article that you found. Where was it? Wall Street Journal, I believe?
Yeah, Wall Street Journal. It was last weekend. And it's called The Power Trip. In the article by John Yonah Lehrer. Mm-hmm. And really what he's talking about is what they call the paradox of power. So it's, we used to think that, to get into power, you had to be kind of Machiavellian about it, which means, really manipulative behind the scenes and all that kind of stuff in order to get into power.
Right.
And so where that is still, true sometimes, what they're finding is that instead people that rise to power today, all different kinds of power positions, whether it's in a group, like the head of the clique or whatever, or the social group, or whether it's in business, the people who get there largely have good leadership traits, like, they're polite, they're honest, they're outgoing, but those same kinds of traits, once they get into power, it changes. And instead of being polite, honest, and outgoing, they become impulsive, reckless, and rude. So it's this whole paradox where the vast majority of people who get in that position of power become overconfident in a way, and that's what really leads to their big fall as human beings. And that's one of the reasons that we see things like, politicians who think they can get away with anything, all right?
Right.
Who become corrupt, who, start having affairs, who, do all this stuff that if they weren't in that powerful position, they really probably wouldn't have done.
Right. We've seen a lot of that in the news over, the last couple of years.
Sure.
It seems like more so than ever, too.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this stuff was going on, but
nobody was talking about it.
And nobody knew.
Right.
Yeah, nobody knew exactly what. It's kind of like, what the heck,
Right.
But now we kind of we're seeing exactly what it is. It's that, the nice guys do finish first initially, but then they become not such nice guys and girls.
Wow.
So what makes them turn?
That overconfidence that they get. It becomes self-serving. It becomes, it's okay for me, it's not okay for others. They've done these surveys, and when people get into that power position, they think that they've had people, imagine themselves being in a really powerful situation, and then they ask them a bunch of questions, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And what they find is people say, for instance, like speeding, if I had to get to a meeting and, or somebody was heading to a meeting and they were speeding, on the road. If it's somebody else, we say it's not okay that they're speeding. If it's us, we say it's fine that we're speeding. Okay, when we're in that power position, because our time is more valuable than their time. That's how people start looking at it. Instead of that, everybody has things to do, everybody has places to go, but it becomes very self-serving. It becomes very much all about them.
How do you, if you find yourself getting into that kind of thing yourself, how do you stop it? How do you nip it in the bud? Or how do you even notice it? Or do you even notice it?
Control it.
Right.
Well, empathy, I think, is probably the first step, is understanding that everybody has the stuff that they're dealing with. I mean, that's kind of in life, I think, a really important skill, to understand that whatever somebody else is doing, there's some reason they are doing that. There's something they're dealing with, or something that they have to handle, or some problem they have that they're just kind of projecting onto a situation. So just kind of developing empathy for others, I think, is important. And I think also staying humble when you do get into a position of power. So having gratitude for having gotten there, not taking it for granted, not thinking that, you're some hot thing because you are who you are, right? But that, you got lucky. Well, maybe you worked hard, but other people work hard too.
Right.
And don't get there,
It's also easier for people. People kind of have more empathy when they've actually gone through the trenches, when they've started from the bottom, when they were like in the mailroom or the janitor or the dishwasher, and then they went and they
climbed. Worked their way up.
But
they're finding, Nikki, that people, even people who do that, who come from nothing and work their way up, once they get into that power position, that's when they change.
Really?
Wow.
That's
okay?
Not good.
So it really, even though they came from nothing, in fact, if anything, their attitude becomes look at me. I came from nothing. Okay?
Oh,
okay?
My.
It's the arrogance that happens.
I guess you did.
They develop an intolerance for people who are coming from that same kind of situation and not getting there. You know, I think of somebody immediately like, Thomas, Chief Justice, Thomas, Supreme Court Justice Thomas, I'm sorry, who, you know, has been quoted many times. There's been articles and books written about this, about, you know, how he got to where he is, and yet he's criticized others who haven't been able to follow, an equal successful kind of a path into a powerful position.
How about age? How does age involve this? I mean, if I'm thinking somebody in their 20s, 30s, compared to somebody in their 50s.
Right.
I think the younger you are when you get into that powerful position, the more likely this is to happen.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I can see that.
Well, that's good news, kind of.
In essence, it goes to your head.
Right.
Literally,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, they make generalizations. They judge other people, spend less time making eye contact. I mean, these are all things that we're looking at. And there's just simply less, you know, sympathetic to the concerns and emotions of other people.
Is there a difference in male and female that get into power?
They haven't found any difference.
Hmm.
Same thing, men and women.
Wow.
So women are just as guilty. We're not bashing guys here, all right? They just simply wind up not caring so much about the viewpoint of others. Do a little experiment. Imagine, okay, first just think of yourself as being really powerful, okay? A situation in which you felt really powerful. Any situation in which you felt really powerful. Just think about it for a second, okay? And now I just want you to take the hand you write with and just write the letter, a capital letter E, on your forehead with your finger. Okay, you both do that?
Yes.
Okay.
All right, now, which way is the capital E facing? Is it facing so that if I was looking at you, at your forehead, I would read it correctly, or is it facing so that I would read it backwards?
I did it front ways, so you'd read it.
I have no idea.
Normally. You did it backwards.
I'm left-handed, so I don't know. It's all backwards.
Okay. So hers was backwards. Hers was backwards for me, right? For somebody else.
Yes.
And yours was forward for somebody else.
Right.
Okay. So what they found was people who see themselves in a truly powerful position will almost always do it backwards for other people. Okay.
Really?
Because they're not looking at they're not thinking about somebody else's viewpoint.
Interesting.
All right?
Interesting.
Isn't that interesting? I thought that was really interesting.
Just because of the way you put a letter on your forehead?
Yeah. It correlates with somebody's world perspective, how they view the world. Now, I asked you to, you know, think about yourself in a position where you felt powerful. So when you feel powerful, that's what you tend to do. So I thought it was a really interesting experiment. And I actually did it. I just sort of did it randomly, and I did it, you know, frontward so that another person would read it correctly. And then when I tried it, you know, a little later, and I really kind of thought about myself in some kind of, you know, really when I felt really powerful, but lo and behold, I did it again, and then I noticed I actually did do it backwards. You know, I did so it would be backwards for somebody else.
Huh.
So it's really, you know, it has to do with how you're feeling about you, and that's how you see the world.
Interesting.
That is interesting stuff.
Yeah, so power can really turn us into hypocrites.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, you know, maybe you know somebody that they started out at the bottom. Maybe they worked their way up to something, and you saw a change in them. Or maybe you know somebody that, you know, hasn't changed. And, you know, what's kept them humble or, you know, in the right headspace, would you say?
Yeah. The guy in space, Steve Slater, you're talking about?
What's that?
Which one are you talking about? Steve Slater, the guy who jumped off the
airplane? Oh, yes, Steve Slater. There's
You know, I was just thinking about people that I've known that have gone from, you know, regular Joe Schmo, not that they're just regular, but you know what I mean,
right.
And then into a managerial position,
right.
And they have all changed for the negative.
Yeah, they all change, right, towards the negative.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
That's essentially what happens to most people. So, yeah, do you know anybody who's really changed once they got into a position of power? Or do you know somebody who stayed really grounded and stayed a really fantastic person all around, even though they became powerful?
Yeah, all right. Therapy Thursday, 842-KLOY. 8:26 with Therapy Thursday and Dr. Judy Blume. And Dr. Judy, you know, it's back to school week here. And the other day, it was something that Nikki and I were both surprised to hear from, well, I don't know if I was surprised, that parents wouldn't mind putting cameras on their kids to be able to monitor what they're doing.
Yeah, parents get power trips too, and that's, I think, really what we're talking about here. They, you know, they're in the position of authority, and they want to maintain that authority at all times, and, you know, they don't really trust that their kids are going to be doing what they are supposed to be doing. So they want to be there, even if it's virtually be there, all the time.
Well, granted, they need to be authoritative. And I think that's what parents need to do.
Absolutely, they need to be authoritative, but they also need to give their kids a little space and a little room and some trust as well. And that's it's a hard balance. But and the urge is there. I mean, you know, you want to keep your kids safe, and you want to make sure your kid is okay, and all that stuff.
Yeah,
that
but no,
comes up for the parents, you know.
They made such one mom made a strange comment saying, "I want to be there right before they make their mistakes, so I can make sure that they don't make mistakes." And I went, "Oh my goodness!"
Right?
Do you know what you're creating for your child if you are that and you're there to stop every mistake they make?
Exactly.
Oh.
Exactly. We have to learn and learn how to choose, you know, healthy choices by making mistakes. I mean, that is one of the ways that are critical to learning to take care of yourself.
Because when you make a mistake, I know I don't, you know, I don't like to repeat it.
Yeah, you don't want to do it again.
No.
Right. So it's really, you know, it's really critical that parents kind of back off a little bit. Not, but believe me, I understand the urge. You know, when my kids were teenagers, which isn't that long ago, I remember really, I mean, having to stop myself from picking up the phone and ordering a GPS unit for the car that they were driving so I would know where they are. Because, you know, you worry about them, especially they're out late at night. They're new drivers,
right.
You know. It's, you don't know what their friends are doing in the car. It's, you know, all that stuff. And so even if you trust your kids, you may not trust their friends. And it's really, the urge to do it is strong. And you really got to stop yourself. You know, and another thing that parents are doing that, you know, teens especially are just going ape about is moms on Facebook.
Yeah, we found this article from the LA Times. 1 in 6 teenagers are planning to quit Facebook now that their parents are on it.
Yeah, exactly. So talk about spying on them in cyberspace, and that's how they feel, you know?
And they want to defriend them, too.
Yeah.
Right, because they find it, and the moms in particular, apparently, that are most at fault here, because the moms are writing really inappropriate comments on their, you know, their kids' walls.
Really?
Yeah. You know, things like, oh, I remember you when you were, you know, this age doing this. You know, some really embarrassing thing.
Oh,
right?
Okay. I thought inappropriate was, you know.
Yeah, I don't know where you're going with that.
That kind of stuff. Or honey, don't forget, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like a message, but they're not saying it's a message. They just post it on the wall, you know.
Right.
And the kids are embarrassed as hell. So, it's that helicopter parent now becoming a helicopter cyberspace parent, you know, and for, you know, the parents is also, they're kind of, this way I keep tabs on all the kids, on what all their friends are doing too, right? Because they write about what they're doing on the Facebook pages.
Right. I wonder, you know, we've all been embarrassed of our parents. Mm-hmm. I wonder when you're a parent, do you not remember how embarrassed you were? So you think, why do I want to embarrass my kid?
Yeah, right.
But yet it doesn't matter. It's like, I don't care. I know I was embarrassed, but I'm dropping you right in the front. I'm not dropping you off 3 blocks over.
Right.
It's so strange.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't understand.
Exactly. And I think a lot of parents do forget. They simply rationalize it. Again, let's go back to the power trip. You know, one of the things they find is that instead of analyzing, you know, the strength of an argument when you're in power, if you have authority, you focus on whether or not the argument confirms what you already believe, okay? And if it doesn't confirm it, then you just kind of conveniently ignore it. So if you're already set in the belief that I need to keep an eye on my kid all the time, or I need to be there with my kid all the time, or any of those kind of things, you're going to ignore the fact that you know, are totally, you know, embarrassed by it yourself when you're a kid, or you're going to ignore the fact that, you know, your kid is going to defriend you on Facebook if you keep acting like you're acting, you know,
right.
because it doesn't fit with what you want.
You know, sometimes I have some of my little cousins on Facebook, and mm-hmm. I'm reading what they're saying, and I go, oh, my God.
Yes.
Are you really saying that right now?
I think the same thing.
Oh, my goodness. Like, you're telling me everything. Everything.
Yeah. Too much information.
Too much. It's like, my gosh.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm even bothered by it, and I'm just, you know, your cousin, not your mom.
Yeah.
But it's just because they're teenagers, what, they're 21, 22. Right. I don't know. Or whatever. They're young adults.
Yeah, young adults. That's
but,
right.
you know, there's
But yeah, and it's, you know, we have to self-monitor. I mean, if you are going to be, if you're a parent and you are on your kids' Facebook pages, you have to know what your boundaries are, you know, and what their boundaries are, and honor that and not abuse the privilege. It's a privilege to be there, really, that they trust you enough to allow you to be their friend on Facebook, right?
Yeah, right.
Well, I talk about power. I mean,
right.
You on anybody on Facebook. I mean, that's your forum of power to say whatever you want.
Maybe, right. you know, maybe you're a parent and maybe you've just gotten on the bandwagon or you've been on Facebook for a while and you just recently friended your kids. And what? How did that work out? And what's going on with that? Did they accept you? They deny you?
What fight happened?
Yeah, that's how the fight started. All right, 842 KLO. 839 Therapy Thursday with Dr. Judy Blume. And we're talking about power tripping and workplace, business, politics.
With your own kids.
Parents. and we're talking about helicopter parents and how really their desire to make sure that their kids don't make any mistakes is causing this whole backlash among the kids who don't want mom or dad, you know, in their life at every moment. And the other thing it's causing, and there's an article in the New York Times Magazine section last weekend about this, is 20-somethings, more and more, aren't leaving the house in terms of moving out and moving out on their own and just floundering, you know, all through their 20s because of those same kinds of helicopter parents because they're afraid to make a mistake. So it's, you know, yes, the economy is a problem and people are, you know, staying home longer because they can't afford to move out. But one of the reasons that they can't afford to move out is they're not willing to take, you know, risks with jobs, they're not, or living on their own, and they're not willing to, you know, try and do things that mom or dad may not have chosen for them to do. You know, their whole life was run by, you know, this helicopter parent, and now they're out there having to make it on their own, and they're afraid to even try anything.
So they don't even want to risk, to risk to be successful, you got to risk to fail, too.
That's correct. You bet. You got to risk falling flat on your face. You
right.
know, and sometimes falling flat on your face is exactly what you need to do in order to, you know, be successful later.
Yeah. Failing
so
is not
but,
bad.
You know, when you've never been allowed to fail, it makes the whole idea of it much scarier. And when you've never been the one planning your life or, you know, deciding what you do, you know, every moment of your day has been scheduled and supervised, you're afraid to get out there.
I wonder how culturally this went into their study. Because I know, you know, a lot of Asian parents, especially Filipino parents in my family, it's the kids stay till they're married. And once you're married, then you move out. And that's just the way it goes. And there's nothing wrong or strange or odd about that.
Right, right. And that's a real, that's a cultural thing. It's certainly true, you know, if you go to Italy, in Italian families in Italy, it's real common, you know, for the, especially adult sons to stay home.
Yes.
Really?
It
yeah,
is.
Until they
no
marry.
Kidding. Huh. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So there's that cultural component, and you know there's you know a lot of discussion about whether you know the 20s are actually a whole life stage that we haven't really considered as a separate life stage, and I think that there's a lot of argument that it is a different life stage than people have kind of given it credit for, especially because we live longer now and all that kind of stuff, you know, so we that delayed adolescence kind of thing.
20s are a pretty interesting time now that I've moved on to my first year in my 30s.
Mm-hmm.
I think I look back and went, wow, 20s were crazy for me. I mean, what an extreme person I was from my early 20s to my late 20s.
Right, just and how much you changed.
Chaos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, you know, and that's an important developmental stage. But you know, part of making that stage successful is learning how to survive on your own without mom and dad, okay? And knowing that you can pick yourself up and recover if you do fail. and that it's okay to try things and see if they fit. And if they don't fit, try something else. You know, all that stuff. And you can't really get there if all your basic needs are constantly being met by somebody outside the self. So, mm-hmm. yes, parents may need to help you out economically, but that should be minimal.
Got it.
All right.
Interesting.
Well, very cool topic this week, Dr. Judy. Your website is?
DrJudyBloom.com, and that's J-U-D-I-B-L-O-O-M.
All right. We'll talk to you again next week. Have a great one.
You too.